Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. All right. Couple schedule things coming up here. I know some people probably get tired of the scheduling section, but got to let people know somehow.
Absolutely.
So this podcast today, and no Stitch Hour tonight. And then this is going to be the last thing until July 9.
Wow.
I've got some traveling I have to do and some other obligations that just make it really difficult to get these things posted, actually get them all processed and posted. So going to take another little break till July 9, and then we'll be back with Elizabeth Ashdown, who is a passementary artist. Holy smoke, she's amazing. Yeah, Elizabeth Ashdown, Ashdown from the UK. Look her up. She is astounding stuff. So she'll be back on, she'll be the show on July 9, and then I think then we should be back on a regular schedule for the foreseeable future. So, but just got to take this one more break here and, life. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. And as my favorite comedian, Mark Maron, says, I don't know how much time I have left, so I'm gonna do the life things. yep.
One of my... what was it Ray said? Fun retirement?
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
man.
That.
Yeah. Think about that. Fun retirement. Yep.
Yeah.
Retiring early so you can do what you want to do. Yep.
Fantastic.
More power to her. Yeah, check out Ray Niles, Red Barn Samplers, this past Sunday's podcast, if you haven't listened to it. A real fascinating story about how she got an amazing collection of samplers and how Red Barn Samplers got started and what she's doing with it. Did not expect to hear that at all. Didn't know that story. Yeah.
Yeah, that was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yep. That was, because normally, obviously when we do these shows, a lot of research and a lot of time going into getting all the background. So you pretty much know what you're going to talk about and what the answers to the questions are. Did not know that part. And that was so cool. So,
Yeah.
Yep. So check that out Sunday and check out her samplers. And she sells those through Sassy Jack's. I mean, you can get them through other shops too, but of course, we mentioned Sassy Jack's because Kim sponsors us. And so you can go to Sassy Jack's and get the Red Barn sampler charts and then get kitted up and everything. Kim will fix you up. But she's got some really nice stuff. And you can tell from the discussion Sunday and some discussions we had after the fact, there's a bunch more really cool stuff coming up. So, yeah. Get Red Barn samplers on your list because I think it's going to be fun. Yep.
I think so.
Yep. The not one more thing commitment. Still clean. Still clean.
Well, June isn't over yet.
I know. That's just it. Yeah, we haven't even got the first month in. And people are tempting all over the place. Yeah, okay. Hey, how about this? And you too. So, Yep. I'm not caving first. Mm-mm. Nope. It's going to be Beth. Yeah. I did get, actually, Beth and I both got Jane Turner started Sunday. So we're underway with that. Jane Turner SAL. Beth put the hashtag up there, Jane Turner SAL. I got... it was an interesting experience, just setting up, no big deal, fixing the linen, getting it mounted on the scroll bar, same routine. But I always stitch samplers on 40 count over two. And, I mean, just all the time. Well, this is 37 count because you got to have a little more room because of some of the stitches. Mm-hmm. And using Soie d'Alger silk, on a 37 count Russian tea cake from Sassy Jack's. And that's 37 count, the instructions say to use two threads. two strands. But it's kind of, for me, it's kind of right in the middle between one and two strands.
Yeah.
So I had to do some, I spent a bit of time experimenting. I finally went with two strands, but I think I'm going to, there's going to be some stitches. I'm going to have to go to one just because. But, you know, it's like it's too open and then two strands are almost too bulky. And, yeah, I don't know.
Beth isn't using Soie d'Alger, is she?
No, she's using that silk from, oh, I have it right here. Yeah, Vicki Clayton, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, that's what she's using. So I don't know. That's, see, I have it right here. So that's about the same thickness each strand as Soie d'Alger, I'd suggest. But I haven't.
So she might use Soie d'Alger as her base.
Yeah, that could be, yeah, yeah. But I haven't talked to Beth about what she's using, if she's using one or two. So anyway, I went with two for three or four stitches, and then it was bedtime. So we'll see.
Well, and it may depend on the color, too.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So if you've got a bright color where you know you don't want to see any of your fabric behind it, then you'd want two threads.
Yeah. And see, that was the thing. The first element is a dark blue thread on Russian tea cake. Well, I was getting more. I don't mind a little ground cloth showing through, but I was getting, it was like it was clear X's. And
yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah, no thanks. So
yeah,
yeah, it's just, you know, it's part of the process, and I'm sure once I get going, then it'll I'll just figure it out. But
well, one advantage of using two strands is you can do a loop start.
Yep, that was a plus. I gotta hand it to you. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, that really speeds up starting.
Yeah, I did enjoy that little aspect. So I got a bunch of stitching in the margins and then two or three stitches of actual stuff. And that was the other thing, this not one more thing. I knew it was going to happen, cause so I have these skeins of silk, and normally for samplers I cut them to 18 or 20 inch lengths and put them on thread drops, cause you just make it X's. But the stitches in this thing, you know, there's very little cross stitch, and I don't know what I'm going to have to use in terms of lengths, so I'm not going to cut the skeins.
Right.
And so then my first thought was, well, I'm wrapping them on bobbins. Mm-hmm. I don't have any bobbins. Oh. Well, I'll order some bobbins. Not one more thing. Not one more thing. So now I'm stuffing these skeins in little flossed-away bags.
Yeah.
And I fear tanglement. I don't know.
I don't think you'll have too much trouble with that. I mean, I do that sometimes, and I just try to keep them, you know, fairly neat when I put it back in the bag.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to have to do, because I wasn't caving. If I cave, it's not going to be for bobbins.
Well, right. And the other thing you could do is study the pattern, which I'm sure you've already done to some extent.
Yep.
But look at the stitches that you're going to need, maybe more than. Maybe what you do is cut to 36-inch lengths.
Oh, now there's a thought, yeah.
And then when you don't need 36 inches, then you can cut those in half and use the shorter lengths.
Okay, but now there,
That gives you 18 inches for your loop start.
Right.
You know, then that would effectively be two 18-inch lengths.
Now, there we go. Okay. I like that strategy. Because I have all kinds of thread drops. You know, that's not an issue. That's okay, now, that would work. Because 36-inch on any stitch, and this is a band sampler, so it's only 7 inches wide. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm going to need a 4-foot length to do a Walnetto or something.
Right.
There we go. Okay. I feel better about that. Thank you. Yeah. Well, you know, I just like to have the threads controlled in some way.
Sure.
And stuffed in a bag is not controlled in my mind.
And what I do when I have long lengths cut is I kind of fold them in half and tie them in a kind of a slip knot so they don't, you know, get tangled up.
Oh, okay.
And then when I go to use them, I just separate, you know, the two ends and pull it apart.
Yeah.
And then I can pull out what I need and then tie it again.
Yeah. I like that. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'll just go through and cut all those skeins to 36 inches. And I can put them on drops, and then, yeah, that will work. Yeah. If occasionally I have to stop mid-stitch and restart a new thread, that's okay. I just don't want it to be every time, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, good plan. Thank you. Yes.
You're welcome.
Yes. I just was feeling like I was half prepared starting to stitch, and my threads were all sitting there in skeins and not organized. And so, yeah, that'll
well,
work.
And with the longer strands, you know, you're going to have more flopping around, and, but you know, you just have to get used to that longer length on the thread drop.
Yeah. I can deal with that. Yeah. Just wanted something organized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've never been one to pull from the skein, and I know people are saying, well, just pull from the skein. I've never cared for that. And, you know, more than once I pulled from the wrong end, which, you know, okay, you know, figure it out and do it right. But even so, I just have never liked that. I like it out of the skein and onto something else. That's just what works for me, you know?
Yeah, I just pull stuff out of the skein usually, if it's in a skein.
Yeah.
For me, it's just as easy to keep it. And I put them in. I don't use floss away bags. I use 4x6. Ziploc bags.
Oh,
they're a little bit bigger than the Flossaways, and they're cheaper.
Yeah, yeah.
Get 1,000 of them for not very much money.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's I'm going to that as soon as this. I bought one of those large packages of Flossaways one day. I have no idea why. You know, go to the grocery store and get Ziploc bags, you idiot. But
well,
so yeah, as soon as I use these up, then yeah, I'm going to. The more economical approach. Yeah. 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 We think, you know, that's interesting. It's that hobby thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is for the hobby. Yeah. But the same bag is in the grocery store. You know,
yeah.
The same paper clip is in the office supply store. What are you doing? Yeah. Paying
right.
15% extra for, because it's labeled for a hobby. Yeah.
I'll tell you what though, tacks are one thing that I do like the brass. Needle point, the tacks that are the flat brass ones.
Yes, yes.
Rather than tacks from the office supply store.
Right.
I mean, the brass ones still bend and the tops come off of them, but they seem to hold up better to poking into wood than the office tacks do.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that, yeah. Yeah, there are things made for the hobby, and they have a purpose and a design that makes them work better.
Yeah.
But there are other things like Ziploc plastic bags that just don't.
Right.
You know, and yeah, there's a place to write on the Flossaway bags, but I always just put the skein label in the bag. So, you know, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes we operate blindly when we should just stop and think, I think, sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, whatever makes you happy, right?
Yeah. Right.
If that kind of organization makes you happy and it makes what you're doing easier for you, then that's what you should do.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, but you know that's just it. The Sarah Parr sampler I'm working on, so I had to take that off of the stand, and you know, and then I'm organizing these threads, and well, the Sarah Parr one, you know, all the threads are on thread drops on a big ring. And it's labeled. This is the Sarah Parr set of threads. And for me, that's what works. I just grab that set and go. And
yep.
And I got to have that with Jane Turner, and now I will have with your suggestions. So, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Now,
we got
I was I was really surprised that you took Sarah Parr off the out of the rotation. I thought you were going to pound through it and get it done.
Well, I thought so too, but it's not out of the rotation. I set it aside. I've made a decision here. I was going to get Jane Turner started, and then I was going to alternate between the two because Sarah Parr is just like three long rows done from being done. I got to finish it, you know. Jeez, it's ridiculous. So, no, I think I'm going to keep it going. It's leaning here against the wall with a pillowcase over the top of it. So we're going to keep.
Oh, so you still have it on the scroll frame?
Right, yeah, because I have two. I took another project off of the other set of scroll bars. So.
Oh, okay.
Because I have a few whips. But, yeah, no, I took another project off and put that on a PVC pipe, and that freed it up for Jane Turner. So now I have both of them, and they're both active, and I'm going to just go back and forth. But I want to get started on Jane Turner. Just the first row, the first band is pretty straightforward. And then the next one, though, is where the fun's going to start. So I want to get to that next one. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's see what else we got on the old list here. Signing needlework. You know, that came up 2 or 3 weeks ago. I forget in what context, but then you mentioned it too about signing needlework. And do you always sign yours in some way?
I do not.
Oh.
But so it was during not the last Wednesday show, maybe the one before when you were working on your band sampler.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all giving you a hard time about signing it because you said something about putting your initials there. And I think you said that you didn't like to put your initials on things because it was like felt like bragging, if I remember what you said correctly.
Well, actually, no, I sign them, but I don't want them to become a visual focal point.
Okay.
So, I try to keep the thread as, you know, as, I guess, as close to without blending in the ground cloth. I want it to be there. I just don't want, especially on samplers, I just don't want my name to be the equivalent of something that one of those little girls did. And so I try to keep it. And if it got buried behind the matting, that'd be okay with me, too. You know, I don't want to. Like I'll use yellows and creams and that kind of thing to sign with. Yeah.
So part of the reason I haven't signed my stuff for quite a long time is because I've been doing so much needlepoint. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to do a good signature on needlepoint.
Yes.
With an 18 count canvas, you know, it is going to be fairly good sized. I mean, it's not going to be huge or anything like that. But then, you know, if you put it outside the border of your project, then that adds a little bit to the framing. You
right.
know, the mat has to not cover that unless you put it down low enough and let the mat cover it. And it's hard to integrate a signature into the needlework itself, into the pattern.
Yeah.
Because of the size. But in listening to Ray talk about finding that note from that woman's daughter in that sampler.
How cool was that, huh?
I know. And that made me think, you know, that's probably the best way to handle this kind of thing. Because that provides provenance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I did this, you know, in 2023. And I have done that for some of the pieces that I've done for other people. I give them the name of the pattern and who the designer is and what threads I used and what fabric I used and, you know, when I stitched it and how long it took me to stitch it. So it'd be easy to put that kind of information together and on a piece of paper and just fold it up and have the framer tuck it in the back.
Yeah. Well, and see, and so, yeah, so I was going to ask you too, because now Kim has peel off stickers. Mm-hmm. And so if you order a kit, then she includes a sticker that has lines on it so you can write all that information and then tack it on the back of the frame. Mm-hmm. But I always, so you can do that. But then it seems to me like there should be something in the needlework that on needlepoint stuff, I do a GP. And so I do an initial GP and then where the G comes around from the bottom and up to make the little horizontal thing, that the P gets hung off of that.
Uh-huh.
So I have that combined and then I'll put in the last two numbers of
the year.
Because I agree with you on 18-point canvas, it gets to be gigantic in a hurry. So if you put your whole name on there, it's just, you know, how big is your ego, you know?
Well, and I don't do that either. I use my initials. I just put CAB on everything. And I actually use lowercase and just run, you know, kind of join them all together.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not gigantic, but actually the letters are the numbers wind up being a little bit bigger than the letters usually.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you should sign it somehow. But see, for me, the sticker is really nice as long as it stays in that frame because you can put all that information in it, what threads you use and all the stuff. But then if it doesn't stay if the frame gets changed, right. And we're talking about our work as if somebody's going to keep it forever.
Well, and, I that these girls had no idea that 100 years later we'd be talking about them for 200
right.
years,
right.
Long it is. They didn't do their work for posterity either, and I don't expect our work to last that long.
Yeah.
Especially, if you don't have family members that are interested in it and want to keep it and pass it down to their family members. They're going to wind up in, wherever.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I'm going to give my mom's needlework away to
mm-hmm.
friends.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever is left, I will donate to, maybe Habitat for Humanity or places like that for silent auctions.
Yeah.
Maybe ANG.
Mm-hmm.
Their auction. So at least hopefully it would go to somebody that appreciates needlework.
Right. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it's who knows in 50, 60, 70 years, is somebody else going to find that in a goodwill and say, oh, that's beautiful and bring it home and wonder who did it.
Right, right.
Or they'll just find it there and they'll take it home and they'll take it out of the frame and throw it away.
Yep.
And keep the frame.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because it's more valuable to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I've had that thought several times. You get through the pearly gates and a bunch of sampler stitchers or needleworkers in general sit down with these girls who, and have a conversation about stitching their work.
Uh-huh.
Why'd you bother stitching that? I just did that to get people off my back. What are you doing? Yeah, but it's so cool. Oh, give me a break. It was nothing,
Yeah, it wasn't important to them.
Right.
And there were certainly people that it was important to that, made it part of their regular grown-up life as well as their young lives.
Yeah.
But, for so many of them, it was a school kid kind of thing.
Right. Right. Yep. No, I just I thought more than once, what that conversation would be like and, us, we would want to ask questions, why'd you do this or how'd you do it this way or what were you thinking here? And they just look at you like, give me a break.
Yeah. Yeah.
They made me do it this way. I stitched it and then I went out and played.
Yeah. I picked the colors out of a big pile of threads and these are the ones that I like.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Zero planning. Well,
the teacher gave me this kit and I had to use it,
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have a choice. Yeah. You guys did.
Yeah. Yeah. They're probably thinking we're all bonkers.
I would think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty much convinced of that. Yeah. But, you know, wouldn't it be cool 100 years from now if all the needlework that we generate and that's being generated, you know, in this time frame was then collected like we collect those samplers?
I expect some of it will be.
Yeah.
You know, there will be things that people stop doing. And, you know, somebody will say, you know, there'll be an auction of somebody's goods and there'll be a whole lot of needlework in there. And it'll be things that people have never seen before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Spark a whole new run. Yeah.
Yeah. I expect, I mean, based on what we're seeing from the interest in the antiques now, I expect it will happen again in the future.
Yeah, it'd be great if it stays alive. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about that in the show that's coming up the 9th with Elizabeth Ashdown. There's that list they keep in England of the endangered techniques, crafts.
Oh, cool.
And yeah. In that show, she mentions about, because passementry techniques, tassels and fringes and that kind of thing, are on that list. And she mentions that a couple of years ago, she looked at that list and then looked recently, and several of them are off the list. They're extinct for all intents and purposes.
Oh.
You know, and it just makes you sick to think that, you know, these techniques just go away because people don't do them anymore.
And right.
Yet you can't, you know, any one person can't keep them all alive. You know, it's just not possible.
Right.
You know, and it makes me wonder how many techniques before they started keeping that list went away.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I look at Yvette Stanton there in Australia and her books where she goes to these various countries and digs up these white work techniques that are only done, I'm sure, in many cases by just a few people who are still living. And, right. You know, thankfully she does a book on how to do it and keeps it alive, you know.
But right.
I just hate to see all that old stuff go away. I really do. It's,
yeah.
You know, there's so much. It's not. Yeah, you know, so many people just look at it, oh, that's just old stuff. Who cares? No, I think you should care a lot. It's, you know, it's right. History, but it's also in needlework. It's also amazing thread technique, and it needs to be saved. But it's hard to do.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That would be. I mean, that's. A master's thesis or a PhD dissertation to really study any particular form of needlework.
Yeah. 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 The history and everything. Yeah. Yeah.
And recreate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Figure it out, get enough samples so you can do a proper job. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I follow a lace maker on Instagram and I can't tell you what her handle is or her name because I can't spell it and I can't pronounce it.
Okay.
but she said she and some of her, she does the bobbin lace.
Mm-hmm.
And she has gone all over Europe and maybe Eastern Europe too, to learn different needle lace techniques. And, she and some of her friends very, very recently went to, I think, France to learn polychrome bobbin lace.
Oh, I think we follow the same person.
Okay. Lace done with colored threads.
Yeah. Yeah. We follow the same person. A blonde lady who dresses in like vintage clothing.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
That's her.
Yeah. Can't pronounce her name. Couldn't spell it either. I'm with you.
Yeah. But, oh, my gosh, the pictures that she showed of these lace shawls, these enormous. Did you see those?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And it's bobbin lace, but it's done with colors, which you never see anybody doing.
No, no. No. Well, I should try and get her to do a show. That'd be fascinating.
It would be.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'll take a shot at that because I know. Yeah, we follow the same person. Yep. Yeah, I know. It's beautiful stuff. And you know, there, yeah, there's a technique that needs to stay alive. We need to have people still doing that. Yeah.
And I don't think bobbin lace is in danger of disappearing. There's quite a few people that do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see a lot of them. At least I'm not. I guess haven't been looking for them.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to do bobbin lace, but I love seeing it, and I love watching people do it.
Oh, is that the most mesmerizing stuff on the planet, or what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, all we're doing is making knots.
I know. Yeah, says you. To me, it looks like a flurry of I don't know what. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because the really good ones, the really good ones, they don't even, there's no pause or anything. They just go. It's amazing.
Yeah. And there's a gazillion pins.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. You have to buy a small franchise in straight pins just to do the thing. Yeah. I have to see. I'll see if I can get her. And then that lace thing. What amazes me even more is Isabella Pitcher.
Yeah.
The Venice clothes lady.
Yes, you know, that lace she was working on.
You know, and she doesn't do that all the time. And then she'll just sit down one evening and make a piece of lace because she needs it for a dress. It's like, lady, really?
Yeah.
How much talent do you have, you know?
Right. Or to demonstrate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, she's making dresses all day long. You can tell she can barely fit her work into a day. And then and just occasionally she'll just make a piece of lace because she needs it. It's like, holy smokes. I can't even get in the same country with you, lady. Jeez. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's another one. I keep thinking, even though it would be so far outside of our little focus here of needlework, to speak with Isabella Pitcher about all the history of all those dresses and stuff, it'd be, I think, fascinating.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll reach out. You know, she has some thing in a Korean exhibit that some dress, I forget what the name it was. I'm sure you saw it the other day. And she was dressed in regular clothes. It was so bizarre because we only ever see her in these massive hoop dresses and corsets and stuff. And it's like, what are you doing in that clothing? You know, you're out of place.
Right. It doesn't look right.
No, not at all. No. But yeah, and that's prior attire. If anybody is... that's the one you want to follow, even if you have no interest whatsoever in vintage dresses and clothing. Following Isabella Pitcher on prior attire is her YouTube and Instagram. She is an amazing woman, just amazing. In that.
And I really enjoy watching the YouTube videos where she dresses, where she, you know, you see, excuse me, all the different layers.
Talk to me about that. You know, and from a male perspective, you know, it seems like a really warped, sick thing to watch. But that is absolutely fascinating how they put all those layers together and all the pieces. Man, that's amazing to me. Jeez. Must have taken them out. You know, and then, yeah, and then, you know, she said people think, oh, it must take you hours to get ready. And then she'll do a video to show, no, it doesn't.
No.
Yeah.
But think how much all that fabric must weigh.
Ugh. Yeah. And she'll talk about summer weight clothes. No, I'm sorry. Yeah. You're hot.
<It's> just... Yeah.
Four layers of summer weight clothes is still hot clothing. I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All those petticoats and then the top layers. And...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing stuff, though. You know, but there's somebody who's keeping an art form, and I'm sure there are many more of her.
Yeah.
Keeping an art form alive and making it grow. I mean, how many books has she done? 3 or 4?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, keeping that old world stuff alive and making it
accessible.
Still valid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what she does when she shows herself sewing. Holy smoke. She puts that pedal on the floor and it just goes. Jeez.
Well, and so, you know, some of I do follow some other people who are making reproduction clothing.
Okay,
some of them want to do it all by hand.
Get out of here.
And, well, you know, it's reproduction. You want to do it the way they did it. So I think, you know, I appreciate her approach to it. You know, it's her business.
Right.
She's making clothing not only for her to wear, but to sell.
Right.
And if she did all of that by hand, nobody would be able to afford it.
Well, she has.
Plus, it would take her forever.
Yeah. She has mentioned that if you want it done by hand, she'll do it. But yeah. Oh yeah. Get out the big checkbook for that.
Yeah no kidding.
Jeez. Cause just for some of those skirts, it's just yards and yards of silk or whatever. I mean, when you're to the point where you have to lay it on the floor to have enough room to cut it out, you know, jeez.
Well, and then if you think about, okay, well, if those people had had sewing machines, they would have been using them.
Oh yeah.
They were only putting things together by hand because they didn't have any other way to do it.
Yep.
So yeah, you can be authentic and, you know, do it by hand, you know, take it. And that would be, you know, kind of a luxury to take the time to stitch something for yourself and enjoy the process. I mean, it's the same thing for us when we're stitching a sampler or whatever, we're enjoying that process.
Yeah.
You know, we could probably find a way to do it faster, but that's not what we want to do. So I do appreciate that, certainly. But I've made clothing. For a lot of years, I made all my clothes. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't even begin to think about stitching them together by hand. For one thing, I'd be afraid that the seams would fail.
Oh, uh-huh.
Now, I've watched some people that do things by hand, and they don't just do a running stitch. They do a running back stitch.
Oh, okay.
So every other stitch or, you know, every so often, fairly close, there's a back stitch that would help to anchor and strengthen the seam.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I suppose if you were doing a seam that took a lot of stress, like maybe shoulder seams or crotch seam and trousers or something like that, that, you know, you might, they probably did it all back stitching.
Yeah. Yeah, just for strength. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fascinating world, yeah. But when she puts that whatever Janome or whatever machine, she puts that into gear, holy smokes, lady.
That's a heavy duty machine too.
Yeah, yeah, you can tell. That's top end serious stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's where
speaking of machines.
What's that?
I said, speaking of machines, is yours put back together?
No, I have not had a chance. It's all in parts. Actually, it's partially back together, but it's all in parts laying on the table. No, I've life these last couple months has not given me time to go down there and piece it all back together. But, yeah, it's ready to go. I just got to piece it together and grease the parts and put it back in the cabinet. But, Then now I have three more on top of that, but you know, that's another thing that I know that's what made me get interested is there's another piece of history that I just don't want to go away. And, you know, there's a ton of people redoing those machines. But that's an interesting thing because those machines restored and put back into action for primarily, you know, in a lot of cases for straight stitches, are far better machines than anything that's produced today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're just workhorses. They'll go through anything. And they're just amazing feats of engineering and manufacturing. I even did an editorial in our manufacturing magazine just about the bolts and nuts.
No kidding.
Yeah. Well, the quality is 5 times better than anything you can buy in a hardware store today.
Yeah.
Everything is, you can tell it is top quality metal and the threads are cut just as clean as you can imagine. The things fit together perfectly. You know, you're not off by just a hair or you don't have any trouble getting the, the bolt to thread in because the threads are so clean and so perfectly cut. It's just a different world of manufacturing when they weren't trying to do it as cheap as possible.
And as fast as possible.
Right, right. Yet they made, you know, Singer Sewing Machine Company alone changed the world of garment industry and home, home, you know, sewing absolutely changed the world. But the machinery is so, it's just top quality. And, yeah, my editorial was, you know, these guys trying to keep machinery running in manufacturing plants with the fasteners and other equipment that they have to work with these days, other parts. And then I get this stuff from, you know, like one of my machines is 1908. Holy smokes, it's like night and day in terms of quality. And, you know, you can take those things apart and you don't have to worry about, you don't have to replace a screw because it's not going to get damaged. It's just so well made and it's, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so many people bought cheap machines during the pandemic, and then I'd see things on Facebook like, well, you know, my machine broke, can I fix it? And the answer is no.
Right, right.
You know, there are plastic parts that can't be replaced, you know, so you know, you got a cheap machine and, you know, you use it until it breaks and then you go buy a better machine if you want to keep sewing.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, people talk about that in the sewing machine groups. Yeah, you buy those things, oh, the circuit board went out. So now you got to get a new circuit board. But then you got to pay somebody to fix it. And right. That person's backed up with 500 other of the same machine that did the same thing. And No, I mean, that's these old Singers. I mean, there's some of the models, they have gears in them. Some do and some don't, depends on the design, but holy smokes. I mean, they're just small versions of heavy duty industrial gears and
yeah,
they aren't going anywhere forever as long as you keep a little oil on them and to edge Jane Turner, I had to get out my, $130 Brother sewing machine that so I could put a zigzag or whatever stitch it is on the edge. And after I hadn't had it out for a long time because I haven't had a need. And then after working on those big, heavy, not big, but heavy last forever Singer sewing machines, and I break out this plastic thing, it's like, geez, what is this, you know? But yeah. Yep. Cheap, fast. Throw it away when you're done. Yep.
Yeah, I have an Elna that I probably bought maybe around 75 or 76. It's all metal. I got it right before they came out with they weren't the computer machines, but they were machines that could do variable. I don't really even remember. It had like a little rabbit design on them, you know, because it could change it quicker. But, you know, didn't need that. I just needed a good sewing machine.
Yeah.
And this one has cams for different stitches. So it'll do all kinds of different stitches. You just pop in a different cam.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, it needs to be cleaned, but it works great.
Yeah, but it's all metal.
And it's a heavy sucker because it's all metal.
Right, right. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's it was a different world then. You know, I know why I have four machines is because immediately I think, oh, I got to get this machine because it's going to go to the trash. I can't let that happen. And, you know, and then at four, you know, I don't even have need for one. what are you doing? You know, stop it. So, but I have one like the one I'm.
Everything.
Yeah, the one I'm working on right now is electric, potted motor. It's the one that reminds me of my grandma's, so that's why I bought it. But then another one I got is a treadle. Yeah. So I got this old treadle machine, and but there was no cabinet with it, and then I found a beautiful cabinet. It just needs one piece of veneer replaced with a treadle. And so I'm going to marry those two. And how cool is that? Oh, man.
Yeah.
So that's the next one. That's getting cleaned up. And I'm going to tear the treadle, all that metal off, and have it sandblasted. And then I'm going to paint it.
Yep.
And get it all back as close to new as I can. And that one, I think I'm going to strip the paint off and repaint it and get new decals for it and get it all back to, you know, just as close to new as I can. And because those treadle machines are cool.
They are cool.
Yeah. The grandsons, when they come over, that's one of the first things they do is go to the basement. You know, can we work the treadle? And, you know, it doesn't do anything because it's not connected to anything, but they just like working the, just the rhythm of it. Yeah.
I remember doing that on my great grandmother's sewing machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cool feel too. It's the rhythm you get going. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the next one. Yep. Coming up. We're going to run out of time here. I wanted to ask you about the state fair. So, because that's usually August, September time frame.
August before school starts the middle of August.
Yeah. So we're coming up. So what I was curious about is what you're going to enter this year, but then also are there some tips you can provide people who might be interested in doing that? There must be some things that apply to most state fairs. Maybe not.
Okay, so let me think about that a little bit. I've actually already got my exhibitor tags, and I requested 5 because that's the minimum number.
Okay.
And I think I'll have 3 or maybe 4 pieces. So the one thing is picking the category that it's going to go in. So let's just say cross stitch. At the Iowa State Fair, there's 17 categories for cross stitch.
What? And what? Wait, yeah. What?
Yeah.
Wow.
So there's categories for ornament and for things like towels and I don't off the top of my head, I don't know what they all are.
Okay. But so it's based on how it gets finished then.
Some of it. For pictures, there is under 15 on even weave fabric, there's under 15, 15 to 25 and 25 inches over and over. So that is the width plus the height.
Okay.
So something that is, you know, 8x8 would be 16. So that would go into the 15 to 25 inch group. And then they have the same 3 categories for linen.
Okay.
So
let me back you up then. So then that tells me that if you're thinking about entering a state fair anywhere in the country, the first thing you need to do is find out what the categories are to see if yours, where yours fits, or if you're working on one, how it's going to fit then.
Right.
Okay.
And it is the stitched area, not the area that's framed or the size of the finished, you know, framing and everything.
Okay.
It's just the stitched area. And then if you're doing a needlepoint piece for a picture, there's just a framed picture, framed needlepoint piece. And then you can get into different techniques and different threads.
Oh, my.
So then you have to look at your piece and say, okay, which one of these 3 do I think it's going to do the best in?
Okay.
You know, where do I think my competition is going to be?
Yeah.
And if I know Robin is putting something in mixed techniques, I might not do mine in mixed techniques.
Stay away from Robin, huh?
Well, except she puts something in every category, so you can't really stay away.
Okay. So then there must be a mental approach to this thing in terms of, do I want to enter because I want to win? Do I want to enter for the experience? is there feedback? There's no way if there's that many categories that they're providing feedback. So what is the approach there? Is it you just each person has their own way of entering these things in terms of how they feel, how competitive they are?
Yeah, I think that's really what it boils down to.
Okay.
And I'm not particularly competitive. I do well at the fair, but my main purpose for entering things is to exhibit my work. It's
okay.
One of the very few places that you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, most people aren't going to recognize that, you know, they don't know who Cindy Baldwin is. But they get to see these things that maybe they don't, you know, because there's not very many needlework stores around anymore. So, you know, they're not going into the needlework stores.
Right.
And they don't know what's available. So this exposes people to, you know, different techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to sit and listen to people as they look at the pieces. Last year when we were there, I think we were there the last Sunday, and we were listening to people, and two or three of them, it was a group of people, three or four people, and they were looking at one of those full coverage pieces and talking about whether or not it was all stitched. And they came over and asked us, and we said, yeah, it's all cross stitch. And they couldn't believe it. They went back. And of course, you know, you can't get very close to the needlework. There's, you know, stanchions with ropes.
Yeah. A barrier. So, keep your hands off.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you were really determined, you could reach over and touch something, but most of them are far enough away that you can't get to them. And a little kid could run under it really easily, but
right.
I haven't seen that happen. But, you know, they were leaning over the ropes, you know, trying to get closer to see if they could really see all of those separate stitches. I mean, they were just like jaw drop, you know, that is really all stitched. and, you know, we've had conversations with people, you know, that are looking at a piece of Bargello, and they've never seen anything like that before. And we happened to be there when they were talking about it, you know, so we just, you know, butt our way in and explain it.
right. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. So then you guys, when you enter, then it sounds like there's at least some time that you spend just hanging around the exhibit, and answering questions or just listening to people or whatever.
Yeah, and we generally will do, we might demonstrate for 2 or 3 hours, or we might do a make it, take it class.
Mm-hmm.
We've done make it, take it classes the last couple of years. So we're kind of there all day long. The classes are a couple hours, you know, one in the morning, one in the afternoon.
Yeah. So you're furthering the hobby then. It isn't just to exhibit. It's more of a package of furthering the hobby then. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We want to, you know, get people to understand that it is accessible, that it's easy to do, you know, that you can do fairly simple things. Sometimes the project can be finished right there in 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because we, and Robin has done these for the last couple of years, and she comes up with real simple, easy to stitch things and makes a kit, you know, that has everything in it. She's done some things on perforated paper, you know, that you don't need a hoop for or anything like that. You just need some pearl cotton or some watercolors or whatever, and they're easy to do. So it introduces people to threads and
stitching
materials.
Well, yeah, and just showing people some watercolors. I mean, that's got to open an eye or two. Yeah, that's this stuff exists. It's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
so, you know, obviously you want your piece to be clean. You want it to be nicely finished, however you're finishing it, you know, either in a frame or mounted some other way or, you know, bell pull, whatever. Pillows. Those are the kinds of things the judge looks for. So there is one judge for all of the needlework.
Oh my.
And the entries all have to be submitted. It's the last Saturday of July. So the judge has about 2 weeks to go through all the needlework and judge it. And there are like three things that are rated 1 through 5, with 1 the worst and 5 the best, like appearance and finishing and stuff like that. And then usually there's a brief comment. So this is not like the kind of evaluation that Natalie Dupuis did for you.
Yeah.
You know, and she talked about, you know, you may have maybe 5 minutes with each piece. Right. And I'm sure that's certainly true at the fairs. They don't get a lot of time with each piece. So right. they have to keep moving. But usually there's some kind of a comment. It might just be very nice stitching.
Mm-hmm.
I've had judges that didn't like my colors. They didn't come right out and say they didn't like the colors, but you could tell by their comment that they didn't like the colors. Well, what can you do?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Sorry.
and you know, so it might be, there might be a comment about having consistent tension. Or, you know, so there are some things that can be useful. But it's not like entering something in an EGA or an ANG show where you do get a little bit more of an in-depth critique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a state fair. They got to judge it and get it up on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to depend on the fair. You know, there may be fairs that are using certified judges. But, you know, certified judges aren't cheap.
No.
So, you know, they have to rely on who they can find. I think that Iowa generally uses shop owners. And we still have some shops in Iowa.
Yeah. That would certainly be somebody who's seen a lot of stitching and could at least pass comment. Yeah.
And also have a lot of experience with different techniques.
Right.
Because we're talking about everything from surface embroidery to cross stitch to needlepoint. I think those are the major categories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a very wide range of techniques. Silk embroidery, gold work, that falls under surface embroidery, I think. Stump work is one of the categories. I mean, there is a lot of, Iowa has a lot of categories for needlework.
And usually multiple entries in each one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Wow. Active then.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably most of the needlepoint comes from Cedar Rapids, the EGA chapter in Cedar Rapids, and our ANG chapter.
Uh-huh. Hmm. Yeah.
But there are, you know, there's a lot of people that are not members of the guilds that are doing needlework too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exhibiting. And the, you know, the thing is that what we've observed, I mean, I've been entering stuff in the fair since 83 or 84, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the first year I entered. And I've seen categories go away over the years because nobody entered it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we kind of try to make sure that, you know, if we see a category that people aren't entering in, you know, we try to come up with something for the next year to enter into it so it doesn't go away.
Ah, okay.
And they will add categories. You know, a couple of years ago, a lot of people had done things that were in needlepoint, not a picture, not a pillow. It was, you know, some other kind of a three-dimensional object. There wasn't really a good category for that. So they added that category in needlepoint and cross stitch too, I think.
Oh.
Oh, counted thread techniques is another category. So that'd okay. be where your hardanger and black work and that sort of thing go.
Mm-hmm. So sounds like the Iowa people are flexible and working to keep it going and even growing. Then there's more of an effort than these are categories. Deal with it, and if you don't enter, you don't enter.
Right.
There's an active flexibility there to make sure that this thing thrives. That's great.
Right.
Hmm. That's cool. So you got four or five things to enter then, and they're all finished and ready to go.
I don't know.
I knew that.
Well, okay. So one of them is finished and ready to go. And another one is at the framers. I have the third one ready to go to the framers.
That's pretty good. You got a month and a half.
Yeah, I need to get it over to him in the next week or so.
Yeah, for a framer, if he's sitting around twiddling his thumbs, that's a lot of time.
Oh, he's not, but he's you know, so he's running into the issue that so many other people are with getting things. You know, he ordered a frame for one of my pieces that was perfect for the piece, and when he got it, the color had changed slightly, and it didn't work anymore. Or, you know, he'll call and find out that they don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
Or they don't have enough, or, you know, so same supply chain issues that so many other people are dealing with.
Yep. Everywhere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man. Color's not quite right. Oh Jesus. Sitting right here. I got everything I need. I can't. Yeah.
And it was the perfect frame for so we had to pick something else.
Yep. Doing business got to be so hard these days. All the time. Yep.
So that's three things. I think there's another one, but I can't think of what it is off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, plenty of time. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I only have three things, that's fine too.
Yep. Better than nothing.
One of these years, I'll have a bunch of them.
Yeah. All right, I think we better wrap up here. So we got a little break here now till the 9th. So this podcast and then a break till the 9th. And that gives you a chance to go back and listen to some 600 plus, 700 plus shows of videos, whatever, that we've already done. And then we'll have fresh stuff on the 9th and go from there. So... All right. Thanks, Cindy. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Bye.